Welcome back to beautiful Budapest for Season 11, Episode 2 of the Ubuntu podcast. In this episode, for Thursday the 15th of March 2018, we're going to discuss some of the changes coming in Ubuntu 18.04. I'm Martin, and joining me this week are Mark.
Hello.
Hello, how are you doing?
None too shabby, thank you.
Good, and Alan.
Hello, hello.
Hello again. Right, let's just get straight into it. I know you're fine, I can see you. So, joining us this week on the show is Will Cook, manager of the Ubuntu desktop team. Hello, Will.
Hello.
Hello. It's about a month until the 18.04 LTS is released, so we thought we'd invite you on to discuss some of the changes that are coming up in 18.04. So, what are some of the headline changes that we can expect?
Well, you're not going to see a whole lot different from 17.10. 17.10 was the significant change from the previous Unity-based Ubuntus. So 17.10 was kind of easing ourselves in, and then 18.04 cycle has been more about fixing all the bugs and making sure everything's stable, making a few difficult decisions about technology use, such as Xorg versus Wayland, for example, mm-hmm. LightDM versus GDM. So it's more about tidying up all the loose ends than it is about anything earth-shatteringly new.
So you mentioned the display managers and the display servers. So what are going to be used as the display manager and display server in 18.04?
It's going to be GDM and Xorg. Right. So we, at the start of, probably about halfway through the 17.10 cycle, we started looking to see if we could use LightDM instead. But it's GDM and GNOME Shell are very tightly interwound with each other. And we quickly found that unraveling those pieces was going to take too long and was going to be too much work to be achieved. So we made a call then, GDM's the way forwards. And then about halfway through this cycle, we made a call that Xorg was going to be the preferred display stack, partly because of stability reasons. The Wayland session is stable, but if should it crash, it takes all of your apps with it. You know, it kills your entire session. And people were finding that frustrating. So that will be addressed in a future version of GNOME Shell and Wayland. But for now, we figured Xorg gives you the opportunity to restart the shell independently of all the applications.
So is the intention to switch back to LightDM, or is GDM what you're going to be using forever now?
Well, I
say forever.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wouldn't say forever. We're certainly going to need to maintain it for the 18.04 cycle. So we'll look at seeing what's possible next cycle. It would be, and then especially with the GNOME 4 coming up, then there might be opportunity for us to get LightDM working from the ground up in that version. But I think for the short term, it's going to be the default.
Do you think it was a useful lesson to use Wayland in 17.10, like making that decision to have it as a default?
Yeah, absolutely. We absolutely had to do it. If we had any intention at all of shipping 18.04 with Wayland by default, we needed that 6 months. Well, we could have done with a bit more, but we used that six months. Yeah, we had 6 months to find out whether it was going to work or not. And, you know, if we hadn't have tried it from the very beginning, we would never have known. And so, I don't know, 18.04 could have gone out with Wayland and people could have been frustrated by it. It might have all been fine, but we needed to find out.
And in the past, we've had GNOME has been our default desktop, and then we had the transition to Unity, and there was a challenging relationship to manage between ourselves and other members in the open source community. And now we've come back to using GNOME on the desktop as our default desktop. How has that changed things in your team? You know, are they working more with like external developers a lot more than the internal Unity team as they were?
Sure, yeah. So the desktop team have traditionally been a GNOME-based team. When we were doing the phone and Unity 8, then there was a separate team, a Unity team doing Unity 8, mm-hmm. Who were Qt developers primarily. But the desktop team has always been sort of GNOME-centric. And so we're used to working in that technology stack. So a move from Unity 7 to Unity 8 would have been quite a significant change, but a move from Unity 7 to GNOME Shell was a bit less drastic. You know, we're used to working in that stack, and so those guys have got plenty of experience. And with reference to working with Upstream, we're doing loads more collaborative work. We've got people on the board, we've got on the advisory board, we've got people who've got commit rights into the GNOME source trees. So, you know, we're able to push our fixes upstream and get them reviewed by upstream and accepted into that code base. So yeah, we are working much more closely with upstream than we have done in the last 5 years or so.
And how do you think that decision to come back to GNOME has been received outside of our Ubuntu bubble, like upstream and elsewhere?
Well, it's tricky to say. Throughout Unity 7's history, there has always been a vocal number of people who liked to shout about their dislike for Unity 7. Mm. And of course, once we announced that we were retiring Unity 7 and moving to GNOME Shell, then everybody came out and said how much they love Unity 7 and how much they...
frustrating.
Yeah, it absolutely is. So, you know, it's... generally, it's been perceived very well. The GNOME community have been very welcoming to us, and they've done loads to help us out. And the general feedback we're getting is that people are excited that we're working with GNOME and that, you know, we've got our engineering effort behind a more common desktop than we did have with Unity. So yeah, it's been positive.
And one of the things that was key about 17.10 is while it shipped with stock GNOME, there was also the Ubuntu session that had you know, cues from Unity. The launcher was very familiar for people who are coming from Unity. Will that be retained in 18.04? Will there still be the possibility to log in with either session, or can you install things so that it's easy to use a stock GNOME if that's your preferred platform?
Sure, yeah. So we're going to keep the same desktop that we have in 17.10 with the launcher. Way back when, a year ago or so, the start of the 17.10 cycle, in fact, we did a quick poll to find out what sort of features of Unity 7 people were going to miss most, and the launcher was right at the top of that list. So you're not going to see the vanilla GNOME session. It is still going to be the Ubuntu spin on that. And yes, we're still going to make it very easy for you to install the default GNOME session. And in fact, all of our changes, if you've seen any of Didier Roche's blog posts over the last year or so, then you know, you'll have seen how we went about integrating the Ubuntu session on top of the default GNOME session so that we didn't have to change any code, that we didn't have to make any sort of distro patches. You can install, without changing a single line of code, you can easily install the vanilla GNOME session on your machine and have it exactly as they intended.
Cool.
Excellent. I remember reading on the Ubuntu Hub that there was some collaboration with the community around working on a new theme for 18.04.
Mm.
Has that work continued, and can we expect a new theme in 18.04?
In 18.04, you're not going to see a new theme.
Right.
We've been discussing it all along with those guys, and we agreed months ago now that that it just wasn't going to be finished in time. And that's not the desktop team's point of view. That's not any individual's point of view. That's a joint decision between the community theme developers and the Ubuntu community. We've said, you know, we're not ready for it. So it is available now as PPA. You can take it for a spin, see how you like it. It's looking really, really sharp. But there is a couple of little bugs that need to be worked out. But then after that, the intention is absolutely to move to that as the default. So I would imagine early 18.10 cycle, you'll be seeing that as the default.
Right. Okay. Excellent.
Nice. And for those people who want a smaller install footprint or want to customize, there's this new minimal installer.
Yeah. It's to be clear, it's not, you're not going to be saving yourself loads and loads of disk space here.
Right.
It's an image which will give you a functioning desktop. Most of the applications you need for your day-to-day use. So, web browser and calculators and, you know, all of that stuff. But what we stripped out is the more fun things. So yeah, it's ideally suited to sort of enterprise users. So there's no games, there's no video players, that kind of thing. The idea here is that if you're an enterprise or you want to have a little bit more control over the apps that are installed in your desktop, then you choose the minimum install and then you add on to it to build yourself up to exactly where you want to get to. It's not intended to replace any of the smaller, you know, the distros, the flavors that aim themselves to lower hardware specs or you know, reduce disk footprint. It's more about just allowing the user to take off some of the stuff they might remove anyway and add something different.
Yeah.
So does it still have things like LibreOffice?
No, that's gone from the minimal one. Yeah.
Right.
And I was very quick to take advantage of this feature in Ubuntu Mate, and I spoke to Did Rocks and Laney, who explained how to implement this in Ubuntu Mate. And I was thinking to myself, well, where would this feature be useful? And you can think of those people who like it more control over their system. They always tell you, oh, I uninstall this, and this, right, because I never use it. I don't bother with that because I don't mind them taking up a bit more space. But I really thought about people who, like yourself, Mark, who sort of made yourselves homegrown Steam boxes and Kodi mm-hmm. boxes. The minimal install is a great way to start with that, because you just get the essential desktop stuff with all of the hardware configuration utilities that you need, but none of the applications that are just going to clog things up and get in the way.
Right. So for a Steam box, you could do a minimal install.
Add Steam.
You still get the calculator up so you can calculate how much money you're going to lose on every Steam sale.
Yep.
Winner. So one of the big things that's been talked about a lot while we've been off the air for the last month or so was an email you sent to the Ubuntu Devel mailing list. About a month ago now, I think.
Yeah.
And it kicked off quite a discussion, not just on that list, but elsewhere in the community and outside our community as well. And it was titled something to do with gathering more metrics from the desktop. Can you tell us what the vision for that mail was? Why did you send that mail? What was the goal of that mail?
Well, so generally within Canonical and within Ubuntu, we've been trying to focus our engineering efforts a little bit more tightly. We need to find out what the problems are, what people want from Ubuntu, and then we can focus our time accordingly. And on the desktop, we have never sort of had this information before. We are fairly blind to exactly the sorts of hardware that people are running on, the sorts of applications that they're running on their machines. We have a good community who tell us what sort of machines they're running, but you come to an event like we are in Budapest and you would go away from here believing that everyone had a ThinkPad which was less than 3 years old. And so, that's not representative of our entire community. And yes, we could do polls and that kind of thing, but, they're subject to being bent by the particular place that you ask these questions. So it's extremely useful for us to get this information so that we know what we're dealing with. And the right way to go about getting it was to ask users to give us that when they're setting up their Ubuntu machine. A lot of the friction that we saw on the various social media platforms came from two places, in my view. The first one was that we shouldn't be snooping on users, and the second one was that this is a slippery slope towards some kind of dystopian future. And the first thing to state is that
Mad Max style dystopian future?
I hope so. The first thing to say is that we're not snooping on users. We'll go to great lengths. We haven't implemented any of this yet. This was a request to the Devel mailing list to solicit feedback from Ubuntu developers. When we do implement this, we are going to go to great lengths to make sure that we don't gather any identifying information. So no IP addresses, for example. But we're also interested in the sorts of disk sizes and how people are partitioning their machines. Does everybody set up a custom partition with home on a separate drive, or do they just accept the defaults and blow away the whole disk? We don't know. But when we do find out, we might find that people have named their disks particular things that would be identifiable. So all of that's going to get stripped out. None of this information is going to be tracking what users are doing on a day-to-day basis, where they are in the world, how often they change their configuration, and all these sorts of things. It's going to be anonymous, one-time installer information, which will not be tracking users. And then on top of that, we've also asked about installing PopCon, which is a package that comes from Debian. It's been running there for a very long time, and this will give us information about the most popular packages that people are installing from the archive. HTOP is something that we see asked for very regularly. It's currently in Universe. I haven't checked today, but at least it was. But we see a lot of people asking for it. Now, is that true? Are all of these people installing HTOP, for example?
Or is it just an internet meme?
Yeah, exactly. So we don't know, and we need to find this stuff out. So this week we've been working with design to find out how we can get that information, surface it to the user in a tasteful way, and allow them to make an informed decision about whether or not they're going to send this information to us.
So in your email, you listed the types of data that it would include. And some of it is hardware stuff like network connectivity or not. I assume that means whether the network was connected during the install.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Type of CPU, RAM, like the usual kind of hardware information, version numbers and stuff like that. What do you think you can gather from this information? Like, you know, are you expecting there to be this vast pool of information that tells you actually most people have an integrated GPU and they don't have a NVIDIA 1080 Ti or something like that? Are those kind of information that you think you're going to gather, right?
Yeah, exactly that. Where people are in the world, so location gathering, you know, potentially a sensitive subject, but we've decided that we will record the location that the user has told us they are in. So when you go through the installer, you select a country and it sets up your, you know, your keyboard and your time zones and all that kind of thing. That's what will be recorded. So we hope that people will be tell us where they are. If they don't want to, then they, you know, they don't have to send this information at all. But if we discover that 80% of our users are in a country which we're not shipping the default translations on the ISO for, for example, then we can start shipping those default translations, and that will be a huge service to those people that are using Ubuntu and have to then either get onto the internet to install these translations or use it in a in a foreign language.
That's an interesting one, because I remember a few years ago there was some work done to change the default translations that were shipped on the ISO, but it was largely guesstimation as to which languages should be included, so this would be a great...
You can like take a pie chart and say most of the world speaks, you know, English, Chinese or Spanish, but you don't really know if most of the people who actually install Ubuntu are speaking Hindi. Don't know that, and...
It'll be useful. And like you said, GPUs, that will be an interesting one. Is everybody running super powerful GPUs, or do we need to pay a bit more attention to the sort of lower spec GPUs? Do we need to be paying more attention and debugging performance issues in GNOME Shell because it's going to affect everybody? Or, you know, has everybody got a GPU that's powerful?
So if assuming, you know, this all could be developed in time and landed in time and went into 1804. I assume that's the ideal.
Yep.
Right.
Absolutely.
So it went into 1804 and a bunch of people installed. And let's assume that some people have ticked the box. You've got this data. Do you think that's going to drive like 1810, 19, you know, and all the way through to the next LTS? Or do you think there are things that you could like change now? Things that you could switch in 1804 because, you know, you've realized that actually there's something really significant that you'd overlooked, like language packs missing or something.
Yeah.
Could you get that in for 1804.1 or something like that?
Yeah. Right. So as soon as we start getting this information, then we can start acting on it. We can, like you said, include those lang packs in the point releases. This will be a feature going forward, so we'll be able to refine that over time.
One of the other things you mentioned was the crash reports, the Apple crash reports. So we've had that in Ubuntu for a long time. When something crashes, a box pops up on your screen and says, hey, do you want to send a report? How is it different from that?
It's not different from it. It's exactly the same. It's just it won't nag you about it. There is an option already in the settings where you can turn off you can turn on automatic crash reporting and it will send those same reports that you're prompted about, but it won't pop up a box and tell you about that. What you find is these messages tend to queue up. Something goes wrong in your session. Maybe it's a background process. You don't even know it's running. It's just crashed and then it's restarted and everything's running fine. Next time you log into your session, you might find that you've got two or three of these crash reports queued up. So you log into your machine and you get a crash report and then another one and then another one and then another one. And you just think this thing's incredibly unstable. But the reality is that they've been queued up. They're in the background. As a normal user, you would never have noticed. It would have caused you no problems whatsoever. But you're left with this impression that Ubuntu is incredibly unstable. That's not helpful to the user. It's not super clear exactly what it is that has crashed and why
or
it crashed. And so you end up with bug reports saying, I was using my computer and it crashed. I have no idea what happened. That's useful to nobody. You know, you might get a stack trace out of it, but the user is not engaged with that bug report. You put a comment on there and say, please, could you try and recreate it? And they'll say, I have no idea how to recreate this. So there's no point asking for people to commit more time and energy into bug reports. They have no idea about what happened. Right. What's interesting is trends. If you see the same crash report coming through time after time, then that raises to the top of our bug tracker. And you know, we can see that there's clearly a problem there. And the user does not need to get involved in that. So why not just make it happen? It can happen in the background. We'll fix those bugs. They don't need to be interrupted or nagged.
So your team already use those AppWalk crashes that have been coming in, the ones that people have been pressing about and saying yes.
Exactly.
And the stuff disappears into the ether. And then you guys, so what do you do with that information at the moment that you'll carry on doing in the future?
So we'll look at trends, first of all. What are the worst performing packages? What are the most common bugs? And that's where we focus our time fixing those bugs. And what we'll be able to do with these reports in the future is hopefully get more of them, because people don't get interrupted and cancel the reports. Mm-hmm. And if they don't want to send those, that's fine. They can turn that off. But we hope to be able to get many more crash reports, which will flag these up much quicker, and then we can get them fixed quicker.
You mentioned team there. I often see, you know, in commentary around the internet, people speculating on the size of the Ubuntu desktop team. How big is your team?
I think we're 15 people at the moment.
There we go.
So plenty of us. And then, you know, not only is it the desktop team that make the Ubuntu desktop, we've got the security team, we've got the foundations team, we've got the kernel team. You know, all of these people care about Ubuntu desktop. They're all contributing to Ubuntu desktop in their own team's way. So, you know, there's still a lot of people with their shoulder behind Ubuntu desktop.
Going back to your email, there was one part that was picked up by a lot of people, which was the fact that you have an intention to make data public.
Yeah.
Can you talk a bit about what your intention is there, and what your hope is, and how that will help people outside of Ubuntu?
Yeah, so we will make that data public. Originally, we thought that we would be making the sort of the trends public, the percentages, you know, 60% of people live in this country, or yeah, that kind of thing. But following feedback that we've received, we're just going to make the raw data available to anybody.
Really?
Yeah. So we will obviously do some processing on that, and eventually we'll end up with a nice dashboard which we can group all of that information and make it easy to digest. But if you want to go and build a service on top of this, which is reporting what Ubuntu users have, all the metrics that we listed, you'll be able to, you know, do your own front end onto that. You'll be able to dig into those numbers and mine that information. And I hope that we will see not only services built on top of that data, but, you know, people's personalized dashboards and interesting things that people have discovered by mining this information that we previously had no idea about. So who knows what people could do with it, but it's there for them, it's free, and it will ultimately help Linux generally, because, you know, Ubuntu's got lots of users. Those users are probably indicative of the typical user base that's out there. So, you know, Fedora could learn something from this information. Solus could learn from this information. Even Mate could learn from this information.
Kel, wow. It's a brave new world.
So one of the other things that is coming up in 1804 are more snaps of desktop applications and other components.
Yeah.
Is that something your team have been working on?
Yeah, so we worked on the machinery to allow you to actually seed the snaps. So the way that the packages finally appear on your desktop is they go into a seeds file, which then gets germinated into ultimately an ISO, and those packages are on the disk or on the USB image or whatever you do with it. So we've made the machinery to allow you to specify not just debs in that file, but also snaps as well. So if you go and have a look at the desktop seeds now, you can see that we've got calculator, characters, logs, and system monitor, so all GNOME apps, and the GNOME platform snap, which is kind of a shared suite of libraries between those applications.
And what's the goal of this? Is it so you can, I mean, I don't expect GNOME calculator changes is like super dynamic, so people will get like a fire hose of updates to GNOME calculator. Is this more of a step towards having more snaps?
Ultimately, everything could be a snap, from the kernel right up to the entire desktop shell. And once we're at that stage, then the concept of a rolling release becomes a reality. But also, if you don't want that bleeding edginess and you want to stick with the stable software, then you're completely free to do that. So yeah, this is ideal for both worlds. You get all of the fun of the fair for a rolling release and latest crack, and if you just want to get on and work, then you know it's easy for you to select that as well.
Ubuntu Mate is shipping 3 steps in 1804. Pulse Mixer, which we shipped in 1710, which is a command line audio mixer library, and then the Ubuntu Mate Welcome and the Software Boutique are both snaps. And I believe Ubuntu Budgie are also shipping their Welcome screen as a snap as well. So starting to permeate throughout the Ubuntu flavors.
So what made you decide to ship Pulse Mixer as a snap? Is that just to see how you do it? Because I can't imagine there's a huge amount of demand for a command line Pulse.
Well, actually, it's interesting because there's a number of bugs in things like Discord where they mess with your audio stack, and Pulse Mixer is the quickest way to turn off and on your audio device and reset it and get it all working again. So it actually had some decent utility. But the main reason we put it on there is we wanted to test the infrastructure. You know, what happens when you seed a snap? How does it behave? Are there any issues? And we did find some, which we've had to fix. Like, for example, we discovered that snaps were not executable from the live image, and we wouldn't have found that soon enough had we not done those tests for 1710. Right. And we also wanted to test, well, once you've got a seeded snap, what happens when you deploy updates? You know, does that whole process work? So we've been just using it as a bit of a feeler to
test. You're the guinea pig for Ubuntu Desktop.
I was the guinea pig, yeah. Right. Yeah.
We're eternally grateful to you for doing that.
So we mentioned last week that the Beta 1 images came out, and Ubuntu proper doesn't participate in that first beta, but you've got a beta coming. Obviously, there will be an image that people can test before 1804 is final. Is there still a lot left to land before then? Is there still like intense work before it comes out, or are you sitting back, feet up, you know, you're ready, you're done?
Well, so last week was feature freeze for all of Ubuntu, and so by this point, every single new feature in that release is supposed to be done. But we're nowhere near that. We've got a lot of work still to do.
Right.
We've been landing things this week. We're getting things queued up. So now if we want to make a change to it or add a new feature, fixing bugs is fine. If we want to add a new feature to Ubuntu, then we have to go through the correct process and get a feature freeze exception. And so we've been filing feature freeze exceptions like nobody's business. We have lots and lots of things still to land. That's not to say that you know, these are going to be low quality. We've got the quality's there, but we're just the reason that we're late, part of the reason we're late is because it's taken longer to really get this fine and good quality. Mm. So
Something that happened whilst we were off air was the whole meltdown and Spectre, and that caused some turbo lag at the end of December and the beginning of January, with a whole load of infrastructure changes that had to happen within the Canonical build infrastructure to patch all of these servers and the build servers and firmware updates and compiler updates and rebuilding the entire archive. It was quite an upheaval.
Mm. So are there anything in particular you'd want people to try out in 1804 to exercise and push the boundaries a little, or is it just, you know, use it as a daily driver or use it in particular scenarios?
Yeah, using it as a daily driver is where we're looking for help. Like we said earlier on, the 1804 there's no earth-shattering new features in there. There's GNOME 3.28, but we've been running, you know, the 3.27 releases before it's declared stable, as it were, all throughout this cycle. So, yeah, we're pretty sure we've got a handle on where the bugs are and they're either fixed or about to be fixed. But we really need just people to take it out and click all the buttons and move all the levers and see what happens, and let us know if something breaks.
Awesome.
Well, thanks very much for joining us, Will. I think that was a great insight to some of the changes that are coming up in Ubuntu 1804. What did you think about that? We'd love to hear your thoughts. So if you've got some feedback, please send it to show@ubuntupodcast.org or comment on the website, or send the feedback through any of our social accounts. Thank you. And there it is. Episode 2 in the bag. Well, we're getting quite good at this remote business, aren't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was good. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah. It's always nice having Will on.
Yeah, he's a good guy, isn't he?
Yes.
I was a bit surprised he's running Ubuntu Mate, though.
Well, how horrible you are. I love the fact that since I've been running KDE, I mentioned last week I've been running KDE, every so often you'll needle me and be like, oh, so how's KDE going? You're not going to, oh yeah, Mate's got this now. Mate's got that now. I think you just want to take over the world. You want everyone to run Ubuntu Mate.
I'm very proud of Ubuntu Mate 1804.
Good.
Yeah, I am.
Cool.
Right, well, that's all. Thanks to Bitfolk for their no-nonsense VPS hosting. Alan and Mark will be back next week with more news, comment, and discussion. Sadly,
will you not be back?
No, I'm going to be in sunny Seattle again, so I won't
check
be able
you out.
To. I know.
Jet setting again.
Yeah, that's it. And remember, if you enjoyed this episode, then please rate, comment, subscribe, mash the buttons, ring the bell, and share it
with
your friends.
Are we seriously doing this all the time?
Apparently. Let's know. At least for the first two shows.
It doesn't feel right.
No? Are we no good at that? No. Well, thank you very much for listening, and we'll find you all next time.